Welcome to the Nail Your Nutrition Podcast, a podcast focused on nutrition, fueling, intuitive eating, and training for endurance activity. Each week, we put out evidence-based information to help you learn to fuel adequately to ace your training and achieve PRs. You'll hear interviews with sports nutrition experts, new and seasoned athletes, and athletes looking to balance ambitions of fitness and training with family and professional goals. I'm Sarah Schlichter, a sports dietitian and mom to two girls. I'm a huge believer in merging the principles of sports nutrition and intuitive eating. Life's too short to not enjoy your food. You can learn more about my work at bucketlisttummy.com.
And I'm Marita, a sports dietitian and mom to two boys in San Antonio, Texas. I work with endurance athletes at my private practice, Eat to Compete. My goal is to help runners and triathletes learn to fuel their training with intuitive eating, heal disordered eating, and become a happier and more resilient athlete. We are two sports dietitians and moms here to break down the nutrition science to make training more fun and approachable for you. Whether you're a novice athlete, a weekend warrior, a mom trying to fit in a consistent exercise schedule, or a top finisher at big races, we want to help you understand the importance of fueling well. We're so glad you're here and would appreciate you sharing this episode with someone you think would enjoy it, like your favorite running buddy or a coworker who trains too. All right, let's dive into today's episode.
Hello, hello. It has been a while, but it's very nice to be back recording again. Just Sarah here today, and today I have the pleasure of speaking with a sports dietitian who I have a lot of respect for, and I think you guys are really, really going to love this episode. Her name is Leslie Bonsi. She is the owner of Active Eating Advice by Leslie, the co-founder of Performance 365. And you can learn more about her website and more about her accomplishments over at www.activeatingadvice.com. She is a sports dietitian, and she works with both professional, collegiate, as well as masters, Olympic, high school athletes, and recreational athletes, of course. She owns her own private practice. She is an industry consultant, as well as an author, an educator, and a presenter. So Leslie has a slew of things to be recognized for. I actually had the pleasure of listening to her speak on some of what we're going to be talking about today back at the Today's Dietitian Conference back in May of 2022. And I really, really loved that she was talking about these topics. So I wanted to get her on the podcast to tell us more. So today we're going to be talking all about accessibility for athletes and those who may not have access to some of the foods that we talk about or be able to afford some of those foods. We're going to talk about resources for them and how you can still fuel to succeed and to perform. Leslie was a joy to talk with. She has a lot of food puns. She rhymes a lot. She's very funny. And I really am excited for you all to listen to this episode. So from here on out, just another note, Marita and I will probably be just putting out one episode a month. If so, for the time being, just we both have our third baby in the last few months. So we are both adjusting to new family life and dynamics. And of course, very busy chasing after three little children, five and under. So thank you for your patience with us. We will look forward to getting back to publishing on a more regular schedule sometime soon. But in the meantime, please continue to send us updates. Please review the podcast if you haven't done that yet. That makes such a big difference. And please let us know if there's any other topics that you want to hear about, and we will get working on those. Okay, let's get right to the show. Okay, hi, Leslie. Thanks for joining the podcast today.
Oh, Sarah, I am so excited to be here.
Thank you. Can you tell our audience a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So I am a registered dietitian, also board certified specialist in sports dietetics. And probably most importantly at the moment is the sports dietitian for the 2023 Super Bowl champion Kansas City Chiefs. I've been with them for 9 years. So that's two Super Bowls. Well, I've been there, and you know, the last one they had was 50 years ago. So I'm just saying that I think nutrition might have a little bit to do with this, but so incredibly happy for all of them. Plus, I see real people. I work with industry. I have my private practice. I do a lot of writing, blogging, fingers in every pie all the time. That's the way I operate my life.
And we love your enthusiasm as you do it. It's very contagious. Now, let's just start with what we all want to know. Congratulations on the Super Bowl win. Did you get a ring?
Well, no, I didn't the last time either. And I don't know whether or not that'll happen. And quite honestly, I'm not the one on the field. These guys are the ones that deserve it for the tremendous effort that they put in. But I think the reward is being part of that pit crew that surrounds them. They are truly the drivers and they deserve all of this glory. And hopefully they'll be back again to do it again next year.
So can you tell us a little bit about what that entails? I guess working from afar, I know you're based in Pittsburgh. So what are your key responsibilities as their dietitian and how are you connecting, communicating with them?
Yes. So prior to the pandemic, I would actually fly to Kansas City weekly to work with them. So be with them two full days a week and not as a team, because every player has different needs, different preferences in terms of what they eat, different goals that they have. So working with players individually, some my frequent offenders that were having difficulty in terms of decreasing body fat or increasing muscle mass. Sometimes it's troubleshooting, or what I like to coin the phrase collision nutrition is. So when somebody has that injury on the field or otherwise, how do you need to make those adjustments to help them come back to that state of health that they need to be? And certainly working very closely behind the scenes as a team member with our wonderful food service department, with the training staff, with the strength and conditioning staff, and sometimes just general staff members that are interested in picking my brain, cheerleaders as well. Everybody wants to have nutrition information. And so that is incredibly important. So during the pandemic, that all switched to doing things virtually. And I have to say for the players, I think they really enjoyed that because their free time during the day is so minimal. It's like when they're eating lunch. And usually that's not when they want to have a chat with the dietitian. As charming as I am, that's not always what it is they want to do. At the end of the day, it's like, cool, when they're getting in their car to drive home, when they're home, having relaxed conversations with them. And again, working very closely with the team on whatever those goals were. Since the pandemic has somewhat ended, I've been back there more regularly, but twice a month, not weekly. And that has worked extremely well. And, certainly the big push is OTAs. So when the guys are coming back from extended break to kind of figure out what their goals are for the upcoming season, and then into training camp is, how do we really get things set? So with one less thing to worry about once the season starts. And then at that point, it's really about maintenance to get them through the season, to make sure they're enjoying the food, having things like flu fighters, shots, this kind of stuff, or smoothies, things that are enjoyable for them, but sound fun. Oh, it sounds like it has alcohol. No, it doesn't. But, just to keep them engaged in the process of taking care of their body continuously without feeling like we're just pushing it down their throat, that they have to, is really giving them the rationale for the buy-in because they actually tried it.
Yes. And all of that is obviously, as we know, so, so important. So during football season, how are you balancing that with your other responsibilities? Is this kind of front and fore center? Are you talking with them a few times a week? Are you coming up with like the practiced fueling tables and things like that, pre-post workouts?
Well, and hats off to the tremendous staff that is there. And because I've worked with them over the past 9 years, we kind of have it down to a science of what it is that we want to have, what needs to be there. Periodically, we might have a picky palate that comes in, and so we have to make some adjustments. But for the most part, what gets offered on a regular basis, there's something to please everybody. The way that the Chiefs practice is, they practice after lunch, so they really don't tend to eat a lot at lunchtime because then it's out of them instead of in them, and it's just not a nice, pleasant sight. So, we make sure that we have things available for them after practice so they can go up and grab. If they want to take food home, they can take food home. Everybody shops the inside of the training complex, which is good because there's all kinds of snacks, things there. They can take fruit and vegetables if they want to, so they don't have to do it themselves. And so we really try and make it as easy as possible, but also it's hard for them to screw up. You can't screw up because there's always great choices that are there. And so when I am there, it is more on individual things, like somebody that needs to rehab from injury or somebody that has a stomach flu or, somebody that is dealing with a medical issue that came up on a blood test. That's the type of thing. And then certainly we look at body comp optimization. never say weight loss. I can't stand it. It's not necessarily about decreasing fat. It's body comp optimization. So those players that are trying to achieve that goal, how do we do that? How do I work with the strength coach to make sure that we have the plan in place to allow that goal to be accomplished?
Yeah, and it's great that they're so open to the interdisciplinary teamwork aspect that you mentioned, because it does, it involves a little bit from everyone.
Oh, absolutely. It takes a village. And so certainly sometimes that's the necessary mental health component, which is always there. You know, even professional athletes are not exempt from that. There's a tremendous amount of stress on them all the time, be it at the complex, their home life, et cetera. So trying to put all those pieces in place. So in the middle, we have the athlete and that they're, you know, around them. What's orbiting around them is all the support staff that they can pick on as they need to.
That's fabulous. Well, hopefully the topics we're going to talk about today, I mean, as Leslie and I were talking about before we hopped on, they really do touch everyone. And I'm excited because this is something we haven't covered on the podcast in depth yet. So I had the pleasure of hearing Leslie speak about this at the Today's Dietitian Conference last May down in Florida, and she knocked it out of the park. So I figured I had to invite her back as a guest just to talk about accessibility, food insecurity for athletes. And I feel that there might be some stigma associated with this. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. And then I guess we can start on what are some of these tips that you might have for athletes on a budget or in a food insecure spot.
Yes. And so first of all, is there stigma? Yes, because it's an embarrassment. Is I can't provide for myself. I can't provide for my family. I should be able to do all of those things. I don't want to ask for help. And so, you know, there's the first tip right there, is that it is our goal always to be the advocate or the advocate, so to speak, to help these individuals and to help them find the resources that they need, just like we find resources for every other thing. Two is, I think it's really important for those that are finding themselves in financial hardship to really think about the fuel going in and to kind of take away the labels, so to speak, from the standpoint of, do you have to buy organic? No, you do not. Do you have to spend an arm and a leg for a whey protein isolate? No, you do not. You can find non-fat dry milk powder and that works beautifully. You know, do you have to use all of these high-end items? You do not. And I always say, I can't stand elimination without justification. If you do not need to be eating gluten-free, don't, because you're going to pay much more for that. And so, you know, I've done a lot of videos for shopping in dollar stores because, yeah, you can get a lot of very, very good food there. When I worked with baseball, our minor league affiliate, they were right near a dollar store. They weren't going to Whole Foods. Wasn't happening. And you can get the things that you need. Once you open the can, once you open the box, once you tear off the package top, there it is. It's food. It's substance. And that's really what we are looking at every day. So saving money by a little bit of DIY with things that are simple to prepare can really be a godsend.
Mm-hmm. And this might be the message that so many of us consumers are not receiving, that it doesn't have to be overly expensive. It doesn't have to be so hard and complicated. It doesn't have to take hours every night. Like, no wonder we're all stressed out trying to get dinner on the table, provide for our families, right? Like, if we can keep it simple, there are definitely ways to do that. Now, you mentioned the gluten-free, so I want to go back to that for a second. Do you feel like athletes are more prone, I guess I would say, to falling under the guise of diet culture to improve performance? Like, I have to eat vegan, gluten-free, intermittent fasting, keto, you name it. Like, these false promises, how does that play into the athletes that you work with?
A lot. So, you know, a lot of this is the influencers and people think, oh, you know, this is a good idea and you should do this. So to give you an example, you know, we work with the XFL, and so that, and The Rock is one of the owners. Okay. And you see him quaffing this energy drink, his company. And actually, one of our players had to go to the hospital on Saturday night because they overdid with the energy drink. So this is a big, big problem in terms of the assumption, well, a celebrity is doing it, therefore I should too. Is, oh, a celebrity is doing keto, but that celebrity is not necessarily training 6 to 8 hours a day. And if they are sedentary, that's a very, very different impact on the body. To even from the standpoint of looking at performance, have there been any studies that have been able to correlate gluten-free and performance? That would be zero. because that's not what it is. It's not performance enhancing. It's to help a medical condition if somebody has celiac disease or gluten intolerance. You know, those that say, I won't do dairy unless somebody has lactose intolerance. And as we well know, even there, you can train your body to accommodate a certain amount of lactose over a period of time. It's all those things that get eliminated may translate to unintended consequences. One of the best examples of that, one of my chief players, who's no longer with the team, but not for this reason, he actually did keto. And, you know, he did this before he came back for OTA, so before the start of the season. And, you know, I said, well, how did that work for you? He said, oh, I lost some weight. I said, how'd you feel during performance? Oh, I felt terrible. I was like, okay, I didn't have the energy to do what I needed to do. Okay. So just because somebody can do something doesn't mean they should, because you got to evaluate on two fronts. So for some athletes, it's physique. I just want to look a certain way. I want to have X percent body fat. But we also need to think about the other P, performance. Oh, I did this, but I'm slower. I'm weaker. I tire earlier on. Those are not usually the things that athletes want to see. And certainly when we look at keto and some of the studies that have shown a detrimental impact on bone, we don't want to do things that mess with the supporting structure when we are physically active. So that's always the rationale I give on the back end. I'm not going to scold somebody. I'm not going to correct them. I'm going to find a way to connect, and we're going to have a dialogue about why you did it, what you noticed, and maybe what you want to think about moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what I hear you saying through the lines and what we preach as sports dietitians is keep it simple, right? Nutrition is not really sexy. Like, it's really the simple, boring stuff that is maintainable and really fuels you day in and day out.
That's right. And, but there still has to be that aha, what's the buy-in? Yeah. Oh, so, you know, sometimes we might give a fancier name to something. So I told you, use this word, smoothie smoothie. All right. No, it's a smoothie that happens to have beets in it. So if you say beet smoothie, most people are like, all right, I'm out of here. Hell no. But if we use that word smoothie, because we're talking about decreasing inflammation, it just sounds more comforting. It sounds more welcoming. And I think certainly when we talk with athletes, we've got to focus on the familiar. We've got to focus on the feel good, and we have to focus on the comfort. That's what food is supposed to be. And if it's not comfortable, chances are it's not going to be repeated behavior.
Mm-hmm. And when you think about athletes who have such high nutrient and food needs, to think about eating all of these new foods or foods that you don't enjoy or foods that aren't comfortable in your GI system throughout the day, like, that's just not a pleasurable lifestyle.
It isn't. And, you know, and I'll use the Chiefs as an example, who's certainly high profile, but they're also not teeny tiny people. I mean, they are larger than life individuals because they are. So even when we have players that are plant-based, and quite frankly, I want them all to eat plants. I do. But I think there's a difference between plant inclusive and plant exclusive. And we have had players in the past who have been vegan, although not for the whole season, simply because it really gets unwieldy when you're trying to get your needs met and you're not going to consume an animal source protein. The volume, you know, the fiber, all the things that are there as part of trying to meet the needs can be a little challenging. And so that doesn't mean not eating plants. It means how can we do something in the most efficacious way, and in many cases, in the most economical way, and what sits well in the gut, because that's the other thing that active people need to think about. Above and beyond what it is you eat and how much it costs, how does it feel? Because if it doesn't feel good, yeah, we don't want to be members of the bad gut club for physical activity.
Right, right. And going back to, the plant-based. So I'm curious, the athletes that have come to you with wanting to be vegan, is it due to ethical concerns, or is it more like the trendy people they follow, look up to, are doing vegan, or in their minds, you know, we know there's documentaries out there too that kind of cherry pick the research. So is it based on, well, I know this is going to improve my performance, so this is how I'm eating?
For many of my athletes, it's been more related to the shockumentaries that they've seen out there, the reason to want to do it, or maybe a significant other in the house who is choosing to be vegan. And so, okay, I'll do it because my wife, girlfriend, et cetera, is, or boyfriend is. But health, typically not the major driver of it, because, you know, a lot of, certainly in the football world, they're younger people. They're not really thinking about health. They're thinking about performance. You know, maybe they've followed somebody or they look up to or they idolize a particular celeb who's been doing a vegan diet and say, okay, I want to try too. Or, oh, well, if I do this, I'll definitely have ripped abs. Well, some of that's genetic, so we don't always know. And never, ever would I dissuade somebody from being plant-based. We always do this in our facility. I would say 75% of what is offered every day is a plant in some way, shape, or form. And there are always plant-based entrees and vegan option, although not as many players are partaking of that, just being more of the staff than anybody else, and that is fine. So, you know, we certainly know with people kind of focus on the micro or the macros and the micros, and I think the phytos are really important. So, you know, what are you getting in the plants of those plant nutrients? So we want them there, but also trying to overlay that with, are you feeling satisfied? Are you achieving your body composition goals? Do you like those foods? Does it fill you up? I mean, all those types of things also need to be taken into account. And I think for anybody who is gravitating more towards a plant-based eating pattern, a check-in with a registered dietitian is really a good idea. Not just, okay, this is off the plate. Nothing with a face will ever cross my lips again. But what are you putting on in place? So it's not just the question of what you take away. What is the replacement for? Because there needs to be something there to ensure that the needs are met.
Mm-hmm. And I think this topic can become so polarizing because obviously you have people in the plant-based space, and I'm using plant-based umbrella, vegan, vegetarian, selective animal foods. But as we said, as dietitians, we want you to eat plants. That's not the issue here. But to tie it back into today's conversation, is that sustainable for people who may not have the discretionary income or budget to only rely on those foods to get all of the calories and nutrients they need? Because like you mentioned, there's a lot of gut issues or a lot of fiber in plant foods, which in general is a great thing, but for athletes in and around workouts, not so great. So thinking about, go ahead.
I was going to say this idea of making hay slowly is critically important. And you know, as you and I both sat in on a meeting where we had a chance to try some plant-based items that were really pricey for what they were is, you know, for that amount of money, you could get a lot of can of beans, which doesn't mean that you might eat a whole can of beans at one time. But one of the things that I do with my athletes is take a white kidney bean, so a cannellini bean, and very inexpensive, puree it, and add that into a box mac and cheese. That's an easy thing to do as a way of adding some creaminess and adding some extra protein at a lower cost, which, you know, those kinds of things I think are critically important because, again, you have to get your needs met. And if you go plant-based, you still have to meet your protein needs. You still have to meet your fat needs. You still have to meet your nutrient needs across the board. And some of those items that we see that are plant-based are not always reasonable price point-wise. Interestingly, they're more than a plant-based milk or a plant-based beverage. Yeah, they are much more pricey. And what are you getting out of that? So, you know, for a quart of nut milk, not cheap to buy that, and you're really not getting much out of it other than, you know, a little bit of calcium. So, you know, there's the trade-off. It doesn't mean that it's bad. It means that how do we get the most, how do we optimize that dollar each and every time? Those are the things that are important. What are you getting? What's the biggest bang for the buck in terms of the nutritional payback?
Right. And thinking about the plant milk, for example, again, we are not hating on these foods, but applying them to athletes, if it's not providing you what you need, well, then you're going to have to either buy a supplement or buy other foods to provide what you need. So if we're talking about the budget-friendly perspective here, just things that we want you to think about. And Leslie had mentioned the canned beans, and they're such a staple food in our house too. I mean, we add them to pasta dishes a lot for, you know, a plant-based pasta version, but a shelf-stable option if I haven't thawed any meat for the week. And obviously, they are so full of nutrients. So thinking about canned beans being one, what are some other foods that you're often recommending to athletes? Thinking about wide nutrition content on a budget, what are some of your favorite foods for that?
And let's start with protein-containing foods. So I would say, you know, continuing on the canned fan bandwagon, I'm looking at canned chicken, canned tuna, canned clams or canned sardines. Not everybody loves to eat them alone, but that's such an easy thing to add to a pasta. The canned chicken can be the foundation of a stir fry. Why pay a fortune for a big chicken breast when you're going to cut it up anyway? Or a canned chicken for a BBQ chicken. It works really, really well to do that. So those types of things, I think, are extremely advantageous. We move into the refrigerator, and we're looking at things like if somebody will drink milk, glass for glass, it's a lot less expensive to have a glass of dairy milk than it is to have a glass of a plant-based beverage. So unless somebody truly is not wanting to consume something that comes out of a cow, that can be advantageous. Yogurt is another one because it is so incredibly versatile to use, whether it's an eat alone, whether it's to have cereal over it or fruit over it, whether it's to use just a plain yogurt and add like a little taco seasoning mix and make a dip. It's such a simple, great way to get the protein in. Eggs, and yeah, realizing right now, higher in price than they've been. When you compare those to other types of protein and the fact that, you know, the egg itself, it's a complete source of protein. It's an easy, easy food to make. It's an incredibly versatile food to have. Yes, those are on the list. When it comes to produce items, you know, I don't like people to spend a fortune. It's great if we have farmers markets around. I live in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. The farmers markets are not going to be starting again for another month or two. So it's into the grocery store. You know, what is around right now in season? But above and beyond that, what's frozen? Because then you don't have the waste. Somebody already chopped it. Somebody already washed it. You use what you need and back in the freezer it goes. Same thing.
And just as nutritious, right?
Right. Same thing with fruit. What's around right now that's fresh? You know, probably berries at this time of the year, and not so much, although the frozen ones tend to be more economical. And those of us who think ahead, it's like, hey, in the summertime, we buy them, we freeze them, and then we have them in February. Things like applesauce. Why? Because that's such a nice, easy food to get down. And when you're nervous before a race or a workout, you know, it just slides down. That's fluid and that's carbohydrate together. Very, very simple, not an expensive item to have to have. I'm also a very big believer in cereal, because that can be any time of the day. That could be in the morning if you want, but there's no rule. If that's lunch, if that's dinner, or if that's a snack, bring it on. It works well. And certainly oatmeal, because of the versatility. You know, I like to DIY when it comes to energy bites, and we do that for the Chiefs as well. So, you know, it is using oats, and it's using a crispy rice cereal, and it's using some nut butter and a little bit of honey and whatever dry fruit tends to be around. There it is. So that can be delicious as a snack item. It could be pressed into ice cube trays, freeze, make it really easy to do those types of things and save a lot of money and get the advantage of having some protein in the nut butter, of having the grains from the oats and the cereal, and even a little bit of fruit. So these are simple types of things that then we don't have to spend a fortune, because in the other part of that, not just the monetary cost, it's the labor cost. People that are athletes don't want to spend a lot of time in the kitchen because they'd rather be out doing the workouts they want to do. So it better be quick and easy. Open the can, plop in the bowl, stir it up, and good to go. That's kind of the way that it needs to be. And then the other thing about, we think about convenience food. So, okay, you can buy a ready rice. That's convenient, but you're paying for that cost. Rice itself, not an expensive item. That's a pretty easy thing to make. Make more, freeze it in little bags, then you have it to use when you want to. Same thing with pasta. Oh, so many people put like a circle around it, like, oh my God, we shouldn't eat it. My last name ends in a vowel. There's absolutely nothing wrong with having pasta. It can be the foundation of so many wonderful meals, whether it's hot, whether it's cold. You know, the versatility of what we put on it, what we mix it with, makes it a really, really good food item.
You've listed so many great ideas, and I'm with you. All of those are staples in my pantry, and sweet potatoes, those are another one that we love. And I always tell my clients, like, you can microwave a sweet potato. It takes minutes. You don't have to always just bake them or mash. I mean, it can be ready very quickly, and you can use that in so many ways too. The other thing I wanted to address is, I think a lot of people, this elitist culture that we live in, say, oh, canned foods, like, that they're full of BPA and things like that, right? And as Leslie and I have been to two conferences together now and kind of demystified this whole BPA thing. But just to clear the record, there's really not BPA in cans anymore. Is that correct?
Absolutely. You can feel extremely safe and comforted to know that you're not having anything in the canned food that you don't want to be consuming, number one. Number two is food waste has really risen to the top of interest for a lot of people, including athletes. We don't want to do that. That's truly money down the drain. When you're using a canned item, there isn't waste. Maybe if you decide to drain the liquid off the beans, okay, that's a little bit of liquid, but you're using what's in there. So, you know, for instance, with other, like even a tomato fresh, by the time you cut this, that, and the other, you might be throwing part of it away. When you're using a canned tomato, there's nothing to throw away. You know, the taste is there, the flavor is preserved, and it's quick. So, I mean, this is that other thing, the time-saving value added. And it's the other thing about the shelf stable. Because again, when you're active, you don't necessarily want to be making trips to the grocery store several times a week. That's an annoyance to do that. So having things that are shelf stable can minimize that number of trips. So even people that are concerned about emissions and the environment, you're using your car a little less often because you already have everything in there that you need. So all the way around, it is advantageous and it's certainly more cost effective to use canned foods too.
And thinking about the athletes or families, because I know we do have a lot of families here that listen that may not have a stove or an oven or even a microwave, you know, things like that. The canned foods for most of them, you know, like canned tuna or tuna pouches, you can just throw them on. They're ready to go as is. So thinking about foods like that, that you might be able to prepare without certain appliances is really helpful too.
You know, and first of all, even maybe student athletes that are in dorm rooms. If there's only so many type of appliances you can have. Some of my athletes right now in the XFL, they have microwaves in the room. It's not a guarantee they work. So you can have something, and if it doesn't work, then that does. Or there's a power outage because those things happen all the time. So what are you going to do? Oh, I could take a can of tuna. I could take some chickpeas. I could mix them together. And none of that requires heating because those items are already ready to use. Or, you know, the idea of using oats dry in the application of an energy bite, you don't have to cook them. So they really lend themselves to that. Sometimes people are using the ramen and just using them dry for the crunch. So, you know, all these types of things that are out there, not only are they shelf stable, but they can be eaten that way. So that if for some reason you don't have a way to heat things or cook them, it's not a worry. They work extremely well because they are non-perishable items.
And that's back to one of my favorites, the cereal, right? No cooking involved there. Just add some milk, add some yogurt, whatever it is. That's always been my post-workout go-to. And then with oats too, if people are open to it and if they have a refrigerator or somewhere to store, there's overnight oats, which is a great option. A little different texture, but I find in the cooler weather, or I'm sorry, in the warmer weather, when I want something cooler, it's a really great option.
Absolutely. And, you know, I just think there's that nice creaminess to it that sometimes it can be a little desserty for people looking for something in the evening as a snack that might be a little bit higher in terms of nutritional value than some of the other sweet things we tend to choose.
Now, Leslie, what about fast food? Now, where does this fit in for maybe the athletes who maybe they don't know how to cook, or maybe they don't have the appliances like we talked about, and maybe they live in a food desert and they do rely on fast food as a main source of their nutrition and energy intake. So how does that work for thinking about for performance?
Right. And you know what? One of the things about fast food is why do people like it? A, because they don't have to prepare and because it tastes good. But, you know, aside from that is, can you meet your needs? Of course. So are there options for protein? Well, that's what a hamburger is. That's what a turkey club is. So, you know, that's what something like a chicken taco is. So in every fast food restaurant, there are going to be options to help to optimize. Now, how do we keep the cost down? It's the other stuff that sometimes cost more. So paying for the sides, paying for the dessert, paying for the beverages. Don't do that. And instead say, okay, you know, I'm not going to get the cookie at Subway, or I'm not going to get the lemonade. So maybe I'm going to get the double turkey on my sandwich. And oftentimes too, especially like a Subway, will they give you extra vegetables? Can I have more of this, that, and the other? At the end of the day, they're not running out of pepperoncini. So they usually have those available. And that can be a way of getting what you need without having to worry about, I've got to store the turkey breast, I have to go buy the bread, I have to do all those types of things. It can be incredibly economical, focusing on the main course and not so much worried about the apps, the sides, the desserts, or the beverages. We can actually do very, very well at fast food restaurants. And you know, certainly even the taco types of things, looking at burritos and tacos, all of those work very, very well. Refried beans, yay, an A plus to that one in terms of being lower in terms of the cost. The rice that goes with that as the grains. So all of those things work really, really well without breaking the bank.
Yeah. I just want to say, I love your response to that, to just, you know, this is something that I feel like a lot of athletes or a lot of dietitians don't talk about. I mean, fast food can work and it doesn't have to be stigmatized, especially if you're in a rush or if you're going to skip a meal. Of course, it's much better to eat fast food. And like you said, you can ask for things, you can personalize it. And I'm thinking of an example. Actually, we got Chick-fil-A the other day. We were out on the road and we got a quick lunch, and the cost of a sandwich alone was like $8 or $9, but then you get the meal and it's $13 or $14. And I'm like, wow, how does this happen so quick? So even sometimes fast food can be, you know, not as budget friendly as you thought. And going back to, well, maybe it is more cost effective to rely on those canned goods and some of those easier, no prep, no recipe type ideas, because fast food is also increasing in cost as well.
Absolutely. And I think people really need to balance that out and balance that out in terms of the monetary cost and the labor cost and all those things together. I think as both of you and I would say, is it's not a question, I'm never, ever going to eat fast food again. But you know, let me figure out, does that work into my overall budget? This whole idea of planning, I mean, it's something as dietitians, as moms, or even as a grandmother, I think about all the time, plan, plan, plan. But that can really help everybody, you know, kind of have a better idea, this global look at what I'm doing. Most athletes keep a training schedule, right? How many miles am I logging each and every day? Think about keeping that budget schedule too over the course of the week, and can be very eye-opening, so you know what you have in reserve that will get you through that week or through those 2 weeks or through that month.
Just a quick pause to tell you about the Nail Your Nutrition Fueling Course. As sports dietitians, not understanding the importance of fueling is one of the most common pitfalls we see among our athletes. That's why we created a self-paced course that goes over every aspect of fueling and pulled it together for you in one spot. The course has over 15 modules that focus on training your gut, intuitive eating, what to eat before, during, and after exercise sessions, off days, and more. Plus, you get downloadable handouts, videos, and more. Head to the link in the show notes or nailyournutrition.podia.com to learn more about it and see what others are saying. Now's the time to understand how to fuel for your sport.
I often tell my athletes too, the ones who have this idea that meal planning, and we can thank Pinterest and TikTok, has to look like this. It has to look like hours and hours of prepping food. But I tell them, even just writing things down, like, okay, I have these ingredients on hand. This day I could make these tuna patties, and this day is pasta, and this day I have a meat, or I have a game, or my kid has, you know, XYZ swimming class, so we're going to get fast food on the way home. Even just writing it, like you said, in your planner, that makes a big difference because you're more prepared and you know what to expect.
Absolutely. And you take ownership of it, and then you're not surprised on the back end, which is what we don't know. What am I supposed to do now? Then we are more impactful and less likely to be reactionary.
Mm-hmm. So my next question is a little bit more obscure, but I'm curious about food insecurity. How does this affect the mental mindset of athletes? Because you think maybe they're in this scarcity mindset and maybe they're feeling stigmatized. How is that? If so, how does it relate to performance?
Well, when a lot of people think about eating, we think about that as a neck down phenomenon, and realizing that certainly food impacts from the head on down. So if a body is not optimally fueled, how can that brain function 100%? So in the classroom, in terms of preparing for exams or doing assignments, any of those types of things, it's less likely to happen if somebody is not well fueled. And we know this in terms of some of the studies that have looked at athletes, those that are able to complete a 4-year degree. If you're food insecure, that's a lot harder, or you may not be going on to grad school. Your grades suffer. You can't finish the semester, all these types of things. Plus, if you're really, really hungry and your stomach is growling incessantly during class, that's embarrassing. It just is. And yet people don't want to admit this outwardly, but I mean, it truly takes a toll in so many ways. So not just in terms of cognitive functioning, but you know, also in terms of emotional functioning, physiological functioning. There are so many things. You don't sleep well when your body is overly hungry. And certainly from a performance perspective, there's no way that somebody can push themselves to the max if they're not fed. You're going to suffer strength, speed, stamina, recovery, the risk of injury goes up. All of those things are going in the wrong direction when we're not matching our intake with our output.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So do you have any resources for athletes who may need help in that category, whether it's more food security, food banks, or WIC, or what are some resources we can share with them?
Yeah, and so certainly if we're looking on college campuses, the compliance department, certainly the sport dietitians that are on campuses know about different things that are available. And I will tell you, there are a lot of universities now that have food banks on campuses, or what I really love the idea of lending lockers, because I think that can go a long way of something to happen in high schools, or even those listening on the call. If you're a parent, think about that, starting that in your kid's school, because guaranteed they're going to be kids that need to have those types of things. You know, the idea of food pantries, and we talk about people being guests of food pantries. That's what they're there for. They're there for to help people to meet their needs across the board. Those types of things can work extremely well to even for college students to meet with a compliance officer about availability of being able to get food stamp benefits. They're there. They're out there. This is what these are for, but we have to be willing to take that step. I think certainly other healthcare professionals can be a wealth of information, just as the way of starting this conversation for parents listening. The pediatrician and the pediatric nurses can also be tremendous resources. And then think about in all of our communities, our religious association, if it's a church, if it's a synagogue, if it's a mosque, is, you know, this is all about helping people in communities. And certainly in many, many cities, Pittsburgh has 412 Food Rescue. There's lots of things around. There's lots of apps that can tell us where it is that we can start to find those foods, whether we are on the receiving end or we want to be giving back to our community. There's always a way to be involved. No one needs to be hungry, and everybody needs to feed their need every single day.
So, so important. I'm glad you mentioned the giving end too. I was going to say, I know in my town, I'm sure most towns have this, there is a food bank, or there's a drop where you can drop your canned goods. So anytime we buy extra, or it's like buy two, get one free, or we go to Costco, we always try to make sure that we're giving it back and whatever we don't need, donating it. So I think that should be an option for many people as well.
And, you know, and I would say, Sarah, as well, is, you know, I remember the years of, although my kids are grown, but of being, you know, the soccer mom and the RD. That's a really dreadful combination. No, you can't bring the snack because you'll bring something that none of the kids will eat. But, you know, really making sure that there was something there for everybody. No questions asked, just to do that, because we can't always assume. And sometimes as dietitians, we give recommendations. Oh, you know, you should have something pre and post. Well, that's all well and good if you have it. That's not a great recommendation if maybe you didn't have lunch money and you didn't eat anything. And so really that encompasses the entire team, from the booster club, team parents, the coaches, the ADs, to make sure that kids are showing up for their practice with something in their belly.
Yeah, and you've mentioned this too. I mean, obviously the cognition, and if you're not getting enough to eat, your performance is undoubtedly going to be affected. And it's just making me think about a little bit about red S, relative energy deficiency. And we see this a lot, especially in my clientele. I see this a lot in women. And sometimes it's conscious, right? Sometimes there is some disordered eating habits behind it, some pressure from diet culture. But sometimes it's unconscious, and you're just not aware of how high your needs are, or you're not preparing enough food, or you don't have the hunger signals. So how can athletes sort of navigate this?
And one of the things of where I tend to notice it a lot, and both in young men as well as young women, is in that transition from high school sport to college sport. So you might have been a cross-country runner in high school, and now you're part of a collegiate team, and preseason, your mileage may double from what it was when you were in high school, so that you are now competing at that level with everybody else that is out there with you. And your appetite doesn't automatically change as your mileage goes up. And so, you know, this idea of balance is so critically important. And so, you know, I think for athletes, being aware that you can't just gauge it from hunger, because a lot of athletes are really good at tuning that out. And I don't hear that until after the fact. But really thinking about it, this is what I did baseline, and you know, this is keeping me even, but now that part of the equation has changed dramatically, and whoa, I'm exercising a lot more. Maybe it's more than once a day. And in college, oftentimes that happens. It might be a conditioning session and then the sport. So we have to parenthesize each one of those bouts of activity, not just the one, the both of those, and making sure that we are not going into that bout of activity without having fuel in our body. And maybe it's that top off for the day, that insurance policy, not to have necessarily an 18-cut pizza before we go to sleep, but on the other hand, something versus nothing, to shorten that gap from when it is that somebody's going to eat again. I mean, this is, I can't tell when I look at my athletes if they're hungry or not. I don't know that. But, you know, it really is the kind of a thing, and that when I think about intuitive eating, that's really what I'm thinking about. Am I really paying attention to what my needs are internally and how that impacts my ability to perform my sport? Am I doing this to the best of my ability, or is there some rate limiting step in the equation that might be not enough of this, not enough of this hand to mouth activity?
Mm-hmm. And I think back to your point, just planning is, it can even be important in this. So for instance, if you know that your hungriest time of the day is, let's say, between lunch and dinner, let's say you do a workout in the morning. It's normal for appetite to be suppressed kind of after a workout for a little bit. We still want you to get something in. It doesn't have to be like a full-blown meal, but you know it's going to hit you in a couple hours. Maybe you have lunch part one and then lunch part two, or a smaller snack and then a bigger lunch and another snack, whatever that looks like. There's nothing in writing that says it has to work for each and every one of you, but being flexible and planning ahead for when you know hunger strikes, or you know you have a chance to eat. Maybe you have that break and that's the only time you're going to be able to eat before an evening workout. Well, you have to override that ability to not want to eat. We really need to get something in, whether it's liquid calories or that applesauce that you mentioned, et cetera.
Well, and the other thing is that for most athletes, there's a plan. There's a planning component to exercise. You know, it just doesn't usually spontaneously happen. You're planning on when you're going to run, when you're going to bike, when you're going to lift, when you're going to do whatever. And so to me, if I think about what somebody's bout of activity might be, maybe they're exercising from 3 to 5 in the afternoon. So like a high school athlete after school. But really, your bout of activity, what I would say, is probably 2 to 7. So you're kind of planning in that period of time. All right, I'm going to have something maybe in that hour prior, and I'm going to try to have something within that 1 to 2 hours post. Now, that means apps, not necessarily entrees, because volume is, you know, don't really have to have big volume around the time of activity. But at least if we're framing it up that way, then we're more likely to prepare appropriately and repair from the activity that we did without it having to be so daunting. So, okay, I could bring a PB&J, having part of it before and part of it after with a banana. Done. Because those types of things are not expensive, and they keep, and they don't have to be refrigerated.
I know this question about supplements doesn't exactly tie into budget-friendly food insecurity, because most of the population we're talking about today probably can't afford supplements, and we really do want them to focus on the food first. But the athletes who do come to you asking, well, what supplements should I take to get the next edge or take the next level, get any advantages I can get? Are there any supplements that are give bang for the buck or anything that people should consider?
Well, you know, one of the things that I say, and you know, part of this is, you know, the legalese aspect of this, because we want people to be safe, smart, selective, sure, with whatever they choose to supplement with, but also to realize that a supplement can never be a replacement for eating. It's a complement to. So it's not like, okay, I took 3 branched-chain amino acids in that dinner. No, it isn't. And that, you know, a supplement's not going to correct an insufficient diet. It can't do that. So when it comes to protein powders, because that usually tends to be a really popular area, is they are expensive, and unfortunately, they're getting more expensive than they ever were before. So how could we get something comparable? Well, that's like using a powdered milk. Why? Because you're going to get the whey and the casein that are in there, and that's a lot less expensive than buying a protein per se. So that would be something to think about. Some people take supplements because of deficiency. So for instance, vitamin D deficiency, a vitamin D supplement's not that much money. And honestly, you can't get enough through food. So that may be something that indeed is worthwhile. Even if we think about a supplement from the standpoint of, well, I want to use a sport drink, people might not think that's a supplement, but indeed it is, because the purpose of that is to help to optimize and expedite hydration in the bout of activity. We could buy one, and they're not inexpensive, or we could make our own using a diluted orange juice and adding a little salt to it. And there you go. And that's oftentimes less expensive than buying the ones that are out there, or instead of the goos, the chomps, the gels, the everything along those lines, when you use a little bit of dried fruit that actually works really, really well, or like the little applesauce pouches, those are a lot less expensive than some of those products that are out there. So we save money. We're probably increasing the nutritional value, and it works just as well for us.
Mm-hmm. Amen to that. I was pregnant over the summer, which is a terrible time to be pregnant, like 8 or 9 months pregnant. And it was very hot. And I was actually making my own electrolyte drinks daily. I was so thirsty. I was not getting enough sodium through food, adding salt. And then I really got turned on to potassium, like really trying to recognize, okay, it's actually kind of hard to get enough potassium unless you're eating all fruits, fresh fruits and vegetables. So I found out cream of tartar is very high in potassium, and that is very shelf stable. So I'd add a little bit of that or some coconut water, add some sodium, and have my own electrolyte drink every day. It was great.
Yeah. I mean, and these are the types of things that, sure, it's easy to pick something off the shelf. And then we look at the receipt, we get, whoa, that was a lot of money. And instead, you know, for the 5 extra minutes that it takes for DIY, it's definitely worth it to consider, because, you know, the outcome of that DIY is we have some money in reserve. And that's really critically important for all of us, that we manage all of our resources.
And it's easy to scale up or down, right? For like the salty sweaters or the less salty sweaters. And I think it also helps you become aware. Like, I do think there's a fine line of like, we don't want you to be hyper aware and track every single thing. But if you're not eating enough sodium in your diet, or knowing like, okay, I can get 300 to 500 milligrams here and I need this the night before a long run or after a really hard workout. And, you know, it's more cost effective to do it this way.
Well, that's it. And certainly to that point, it's not one size fits all. So one individual might find that they really need to pay attention to their sodium intake. Even things like broth, that's not expensive. A bouillon tube, that's not expensive, to use those types of things as a way of increasing the sodium intake. With potassium, same. So instead of just tracking the macros, but think about the micros, because that might be more telling depending upon what it is an individual is trying to accomplish.
And tying it all together as dietitians, because that's what we do, so many of the canned foods you talked about, like canned beans, high in potassium, high in iron, yeah, can be high in sodium. If you rinse it, you reduce some of the sodium right there. Canned fish, high in omega-3s, you know? So, and we realize these aren't one size fits all for everyone, but just some things to think about to hopefully empower you if you feel like, oh, I gotta, you know, buy that monthly omega-3 subscription again, that's $30 or whatever it is, you know, these things add up. And that protein powder, oh, I've never thought about using dried milk before. So there are definitely some ways around it. So hopefully you feel a little bit more knowledgeable in that area if these apply to you.
Well, and I think at the end of the day, we want everybody to optimize what they do. But that means optimizing within the budget, optimizing within the culinary ability, optimizing within the accessibility and availability of those items, and also the palatability. I think all of those are critically important. And that's why we talk, that to me is, that's precision nutrition, right? That's the personalized plan is. And that's also why an RD can be such a valuable resource. And I help one to figure out what it is they need to do to create that food guidance that can really be helpful. There are times where people might find themselves in a situation for, you know, whatever reason it is, they've lost their job or, you know, they've lost their scholarship. I mean, these types of things happen. And it doesn't mean, oh no, is now what do I do? It's to realize that you're not the only one. You're not an N of one, that there is support out there. Ask it. You know, there are people there to help you, to support you, but nobody can know that unless we ask. There's no shame. There's no blame. There's no nothing. The goal is to get somebody back in the game. And that means we have to be fed to make that happen.
And I'll make sure I compile the list of resources that Leslie mentioned in this episode. We'll have them with links at the end. And yes, just to echo what Leslie said and tie everything together, I mean, there's so much that can be unpredictable and things can happen suddenly. So having some plans or just some ideas for how you can make things work in the meantime or other resources that you hadn't considered before. And I think that can be really advantageous and empowering for athletes of all demographics or even family members of athletes, providing support in ways of that. So whether you don't like to cook, whether you don't have a grocery store close by, whether you don't have a microwave or a stove, there are plenty of other ways. There are great foods out there that you can still be consuming that will provide the nutrition to help your performance. Okay, Leslie, we're going to end with a little bit of a Q&A. So we kind of like you to just answer the first answer that comes to mind. It's a fun way to round things out. So, you ready?
Yep.
What is your go-to pre-workout snack?
It is oatmeal.
I do that a lot too. Oatmeal or like a frozen waffle. What's your morning routine look like?
It's coffee always because I'm mean without caffeine. And then typically some degree of stretching because, you know, I'm a fossil now. So it's like, ah, what is that creaky noise? So a little bit of stretching, just a little bit of downtime to compose. And then it's typically out the door for something. So it's either walking, jogging, running.
Are those your exercises of choice?
That and then rowing. I've become addicted to this over the past almost 2 years, and we have a hydro, so I'm on it pretty much every day.
Wow. Was that a pandemic purchase?
Was our kids. Actually, our older son bought one because he runs too much and has had a lot of injuries. It was like, oh. And so I'd never done this in my life, got on it, and that was it. So they actually bought one for us. So we have one now, and we bought one for our younger kids. So no matter where we go, the hydro is there. So
oh,
yes.
That's so fun. Can you compete virtually? Like, I'm sure there's got to be apps.
Yeah,
if you
they do. I don't, because, you know, to me, I just like to do it. I mean, I kind of compete with the leaderboard there in my age bracket, which is not there. But I love it. I can feel the strength that is there. I mean, it definitely is. Yeah, running, walking are all lower body activities.
Well, right.
You're using that upper body and the row. So, it's just awesome. My goal is to get out on the water. Unfortunately, sometimes with travel schedule, it's like, oh no, sorry, can't be there today. And that's usually not what a boat wants to hear if you're going to be part of it. But I will. I'll get myself out there on the water sometime.
That's awesome. Yeah. What a great blend of cardiovascular and strength exercise. Okay. Lastly, what is your favorite trip somewhere that you've gone that you'd love to go back to?
Oh my God. We've been so lucky to have gone to so many places. I would say Machu Picchu was right up there at the top. Absolutely magical.
Did you do the whole hike?
We didn't, because we were there in February, so you really couldn't do the whole hike thing. But you know, that one's there. And now, having seen some colleagues' photos from their trip to Israel, Egypt, and Jordan, that we were going to go during the pandemic, and we couldn't, obviously it was canceled, but that's moved right up there on the top of the bucket list.
Oh, I'm very jealous. Yeah, Machu Picchu is on my bucket list, and I feel like I'm not accomplishing many places right now with small children, but as they get older, I'll be knocking more things
well,
off.
And honestly, so we did not do a ton of traveling when our kids were little. My parents didn't do that with my brother and I, but when we got a little older and could appreciate it and everybody was kind of mobile, we did. So, and my goal is to play Auntie Mame for our little ones. It's like, sure, want to go to Paris? Okay, we'll do that. We'll figure it out. And that's why we're staying healthy, so that we can do those things and really be the fun grandparents.
I love it. I love it. Well, it's always a pleasure getting to talk to you, Leslie. Your enthusiasm is contagious and you're just such a breath of fresh air. Why don't you tell our listeners where they can find you if they want to learn more or follow along what you're doing?
Sure. So my website is Active Eating Advice. On Instagram, I'm Bonsi LJ. On Facebook and Twitter, Leslie Bonsi, the Dr. Seuss of dietitians. Everything I do rhymes and always have to have a little fun.
Well, thanks so much for joining us. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
That wraps up today's show. Thank you so much for listening. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and leave us a review so others can find it more easily. You can also stay in touch with us by joining our Facebook group, Nutrition for Runners. If you have any requests for future episode topics and more, email us at nailyournutritioncourse1@gmail.com. Happy fueling!